it's a form of intoxication. And I grew out of it. But in the case of these kids, and they are kids, most of them never live long enough to outgrow it. Their lives are tragically short and tragically delusional.
When Khaled Abou El Fadl refers to these kids, he's also speaking of his own early years, a life he narrowly escaped. Today, he is a leading international authority in Islamic law and human rights with degrees from Yale and Princeton. He's a professor of law at UCLA. But he grew up in a middle-class family in Kuwait and Egypt, and he was a Muslim fundamentalist by the time he reached seventh grade. Khaled Abou El Fadl compares the kinds of young people who join Muslim fundamentalist groups across the world with the kinds of young people who join gangs in cities in this country.
The main difference is that in the Islamic context, you've got to add a civilizational component. Normally, you know, a kid coming from a certain area of LA who decides to join a gang, he's not thinking about changing the world. Even a Christian fundamentalist in the United States who joins a Christian group is not thinking in those terms. But those kids, they grow up with numerous mythologies about the greatness of the past. And they look at their present, and their present is remarkably miserable at many different fronts.
Tell me how that was real and concrete for you.
As an Egyptian, it becomes very concrete when you think everywhere you turn, the identity to which you belong is confronted with military defeats. If you travel, you carry an Egyptian passport and you try to travel around the world, you've become thrown into a category of the inferior just by virtue of the fact that you belong to an Arab identity. And I remember, you know, going through a stage where I tried the sort of cool route of being westernized. That, for me, didn't work. And what did work was that exaltation, intoxication, remarkable high of finding a group of people that tell you, you know what, you're better than the Americans, you're better than the British, you're better than the Arabs, you're better than the Turks, you're better than anyone because you're Muslim and all you have to do is just simply accept our version of orthodoxy. And I remember as a teenager, suddenly, I would walk around with my head high. I belonged to something very powerful. And I could see the world as black and white, evil and good. And I was on the side, in fact, not on just on the side of good. Anyone who wants to achieve goodness has to come through me.
Hmm.
You know, they have to get my approval.
Right, that's the ultimate power.
So that was the high. That's the intoxication. Fortunately, I grew out of it. Unfortunately, many of these kids never get that chance.
I'm fighting for my Lord. I'm chopping coppers up like Hollywood is double-bladed sword. I lost my shield. Either I'm gonna live to see us win or I'ma die on the battlefield. Inshallah, get slaughtered and be a martyr in jihad. Fighting for my God. Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. Allah white boy is a war holler. Yo, it's time for jihad.
A section of the song Jihad by the Muslim rappers Soldiers of Allah. Khaled Abou El Fadl is quick to note that there are versions of Islamic fundamentalism which are not violent. They may condemn the beliefs of others, but they leave judgment up to God. He uses the word supremacist or Puritan to describe the militant Saudi Arabian Wahhabi brand of Islam to which he once adhered and which we now associate with Al-Qaeda. Egyptian-born, Khaled Abou El Fadl is frequently called upon to analyze the theology of Islamic terrorism. And he cautions that social and political developments since the 1980s have left many young people in the Islamic world vulnerable to Wahhabi influence, whether they and their families are extremist or not.
In this theology, truth is unequivocally identifiable.
It is identifiable.
It is identifiable. Not only is there a truth, but this truth is attainable on this earth. Furthermore, the perfection of God is attainable on this earth. Third is that discussion, discourse, philosophy, history, all of that is either an aberration or sophistry. And I learned very early on during this phase that philosophy is the science of the devil. The devil invented philosophy in order to lead people astray. Intellectuals exist basically to confuse people. History, other than the time period of the prophet and his companions, which is highly idealized, the rest of history is basically an aberration.
And so this identifiable truth is located then in a literal reading of the Quran?
Well, that's what you're taught. I mean, that's what you are taught. And of course, you know, most of these kids, the honest truth is they're not very educated, or even if they are, their education is mostly in the sciences. When I started getting some education, everything that I was taught appeared to have been just a complete, remarkable fantasy and lie. Hmm. I mean, one of the things I can tell you as a sort of as a matter of testimony is that the majority of kids who shared this view at that time had never read the Quran for themselves. And I remember that one of the teachers used to say that it's a sin to read the Quran directly because the devil will play with your intellect. You have to read it through your teacher, i.e. him.
You know, that really helps me, because in the bit that I know of the Quran and have read of the Quran, it strikes me that this is also true of the Christian Bible. You can't really take every line literally, because there's a lot of mm-hmm. contradictory teaching in there, or there's a lot of nuance that has to condition your understanding of the text if you really are taking it seriously.
Absolutely. And in fact, one of the things that, you know, started giving me very serious doubts is that there is this sort of effect of eradication and destruction of your intellectual capacities. My father would tell me back then, have you noticed that since you've gone on this thing that your vocabulary has deteriorated? So I can't open my mouth without throwing out some type of cliche that everyone in the mosque who attended these classes would be repeating.
In the West, when we look at the root sources of terrorism, we tend to think first of poverty. And I have no idea from the life you're describing what the economic situation was of you or the people around you. But I'm not sensing that you feel that that was as much a factor as the life of the mind and how that was oppressed.
I absolutely would agree with that. I mean, I think poverty does play some role. But it is not, in my own, at least in my experience and my own, my view, it was not the main thing. The main thing was the social turmoil and the lack of an intellectual life. Every day you read the newspapers, the new government-sponsored newspapers, and they all said the same thing. And, you know, you turn on the television and there's nothing there. There are no honest, straightforward discussions about anything. You know, basically, it's either how wonderful the government is, or it's American movies that entice you with a life that you can never have. So in that atmosphere, the feeling that I remember very distinctly is that I would just feel suffocated. Right before I started, you know, attending the classes of these guys, day in and day out, I would wake up and go to bed, and always I would tell my mother and father, you know, what's the point? What's the point of this life?
Islamic scholar and law professor Khaled Abou El Fadl. We're talking about the power of religious fundamentalism. At the age of 15, with his father's help, Khaled Abou El Fadl discovered Islamic jurisprudence, a body of Islamic thought that opened his heart and mind. This tradition with ancient roots debates how the Quran might apply to every aspect of life. It is something like the Jewish Talmud. Jurisprudence gave Khaled Abou El Fadl a life-changing alternative to fundamentalism, and he believes that it is the best hope for Islam today, a counterweight to the simplifications used by terrorists.
The more I delved into the Islamic jurisprudence and how humble it was, how these medieval jurists, how remarkably humble they talked, they would never say, God's law is. They would always say, in my view, God's law is, and God knows better.
Right. I mean, humility is not a term that we would associate with some of these more terrifying images, Islamic images we've had in the last months.
Far from it. To me, there was a little bit of even, a post-traumatic reaction as I watched bin Laden speak after 9/11.
In the videotape?
Yeah, on Al Jazeera channel, you know, I listened to it in Arabic, of course, and the smugness, the arrogance, the complete obliviousness to the other, and the suffering of the other, and the pain of the other. At one point, I had a physical reaction where I started feeling my body hurting, because at the time that I had informed these guys that I was no longer going to attend their classes. I'm going to attend the class of the real jurists.
This is when you were a teenager in Egypt.
Yeah, I think I was like 15 at the time. I was beaten quite savagely. And, you know, all the friendship of the past, you know, meant nothing overnight. And just watching bin Laden with his smugness and his arrogance put me back in that scary moment. But in my case, that beating, and there were several other after that, only sparked the defiance in me. I vowed and continue to vow never to shut up and to just stand up to this type of what I consider to be blasphemy against the Islamic tradition and the what I consider to be a very beautiful and humanistic tradition.
There's a Jewish writer and journalist, Yossi Klein Halevi, who's written a book about a journey of worshiping with Christians and Muslims in the Holy Land. And he wrote, Islam had a genius for fearlessness. The dark side was the suicide bombers, but he also saw a great strength. And I mean, that's also a quality that I hear coming through in your voice and in your story. I mean, what is the theological root of this fearlessness in Islam?
Well, you're sort of going to laugh. It's actually goes back to the theology of jihad. Jihad means to struggle, right? I mean, it doesn't mean holy war. It means to struggle and to stand for what you believe and to stand with strength and to trust that your reward at the end for doing what you do is with God. And what I am doing, I believe, is jihad. What by writing my books and by lecturing and by speaking out, I believe is jihad. And I believe that if someone decides to kill me because of this, I believe I die as a martyr.
Khaled Abou El Fadl is professor of law at UCLA. His books include The Place of Tolerance in Islam.